All right, let's talk about this question here from Carly. For a first party S&T, if a parent established the trust by signing a settlor and trustee and cedes the trust, so I'm going to guess statutory settlor here, guys, the trust cedes the trust so that the disabled child can inherit an IRA, does the court ever have to get involved? I was wrong, not a statutory settlor. Can the settlor of a third party S&T be listed as a secondary beneficiary upon the death of a primary beneficiary disabled person? If yes, any tax issues?
Woo.
Well, so much for the easy questions, folks. All right. So let me take a first stab. Let me break this down. Okay. So parents establish a trust as settlor. I'm assuming this is a third party trust then. They cede the trust.
It says it's a first party.
First party trust.
It's a first party trust.
We might want to tackle putting this will illustrate why you should do it right. And the answer is they should have come to you before they passed away. So you need to counsel them about that. As far as putting qualified plans, IRAs, that kind of thing, in a self-settled trust, there are a series of PLRs where somebody did it. Okay. I think the PLRs make no sense at all, but they're on the books. And as we all know, or we should know, a PLR is not supposed to be used as authority, even though we do it all the time. It's really hard to find a trustee that will actually accept that self-settled trust. And if you're taking quite a risk in that case. Otherwise, if you can't have the custodian put the funds, I mean, and Pete, it's nonsensical. How could the custodian put the funds in a self-settled trust? Because the custodian has the funds, but the BLR kind of says otherwise. What you're probably facing is cashing that puppy out before you can put that thing in a self-settled trust, you know.
Most likely.
Which is going to be one hell of a tax.
So the court does not have to be involved.
They won't have any binding authority on the IRS anyway. P.S. by the way.
Yeah.
The IRS will tell them to pound sand. So first of all, for the benefit of the audience, PLR, in case you didn't know, is a private letter ruling. These are issued by the IRS and sort of provides guidance. So in this first party trust situation, right, and we alluded to this when we started talking about the Secure Act at the beginning of this session, the PLR says, yeah, you can leave it to a trust. That's fine. What it doesn't address, because it doesn't have the authority to address, is whether Social Security or Medicaid, thank you, will see that as a resource in a first-party trust. So that be Dan. Probably Steve is right. You probably have to cash it out. Tax implications, taxed as regular income. However, first-party trust, grantor trust, beneficiary level. Right? Let's address the second part of the question. Can the settlor of a third party special needs trust be listed as a secondary beneficiary upon the death of the person with a disability? The answer to that is yes. And we see it in some regions more than others. This creates a revocable, right, third party trust or a third party trust with reversionary interests to the grantor or settlor spouse. This gets a little bit confusing, but what you've done is that trust is treated as a grantor trust for tax purposes to the settlor, not the beneficiary, because they have a reversionary interest. All that income gets pushed out to them. Doesn't matter what the beneficiary is taking. Doesn't matter about D&I. So there are no tax issues, but because that grantor has retained a right in the trust, they therefore get taxed on any taxable amount. Clear as mud.
You basically defected the trust, right? Which it's always fun to explain.
Not really.
How you defected it.
I mean, kind of. Yeah. There's a parallel to the IGITs, right? Or the intentionally defective grantor trust tax rules, but yes. But it's still irrevocable, still gets your beneficiary on public benefit.
And then another question
Go ahead.
I'll just say it's from Tara. Outside of this this conference and next week's, are there any other resources you would recommend to a newer practitioner just starting out with S&Ts?
I'll give you some thoughts. One is you might consider joining Texas NALA, okay? At which, you know, a lot of the NALA's focus, the National Academy of Elder Law Attorneys, is on seniors and dealing with elders. But most of your top practitioners in Texas are going to be NALA members. And you have a very strong NALA chapter. And as I said earlier, you'll find most elder law attorneys, not all, but most elder law attorneys and special needs attorneys are pretty collegial here. And we all started somewhere. I mean, there's always people that helped us, and you kind of do the same thing. There is the Academy of Special Needs Planners here, which, you know, is a program you can look at. For those of you involved with Elder Council and Wealth Council, they have programs here. Another, I'll tell you, I very much, even though I'm a California practitioner, I very much enjoy the University of Texas program, because it's good to learn how other states work. But another place to look at is also the Stetson program, which is kind of like the ACTEC of special needs programs here. Pete and Haley.